Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. You've heard of the Green New Deal, the one at the national level that progressive Democrats had unveiled, not just calling for much more assertive efforts to move from a fossil fuel-based economy to a clean energy one and control greenhouse gas levels, but also to address a number of class and income issues in America. Well, it didn't go anywhere in the House of Representatives, but progressive Californians see an opportunity for California to go its own way. Launched earlier this week, the California Green New Deal Act is a proposal to set higher goals for cutting greenhouse gas emissions, creating affordable housing in the state, and to try and address what advocates see as the pernicious effects of the bigger gap in income in California. Joining us to talk about it is the co-sponsor of the bill, policy director for the Asian Pacific Environmental Network, Sylvia Chi. Ms. Chi, thank you for being with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
First of all, just in a very general sense, what California does here on climate or income or housing, does that have an effect beyond California? Does it even need to? Or is this something that you would just see as really a California-specific benefit?
Well, the focus is definitely on California and Californians. But since the state is so big and seen as a leader, especially in climate action, we're seeing this as a way to set the bar for what climate leadership should look like and what a federal Green New Deal should be and what climate action around the world should be. And
are there specific... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go on. No. I mean that we really want to focus on like the transition to a new economy needs to be just.
Very good. I'm sorry. I took your brief pause and jumped in. I didn't mean to interrupt. Are there specifics laid out for what the... CO2 emissions goal would be a part of this, or transitions of industries heavily reliant on fossil fuel?
The bill does set out five goals, and that includes ensuring a just transition for workers impacted by phasing out the dirty fossil fuel economy, creating good union jobs to support families and stabilize communities that need it most, providing material assistance to people impacted by the effects of climate change, and then closing the inequality gaps that affect communities of color, like income inequality and educational achievement, healthcare access and environmental burdens by 2030, doubling the amount of affordable housing and public transportation by 2030, and accelerating reductions in air pollution.
How would this be funded?
Well, there's... a lot of the details still need to be worked out, but some of this won't actually cost the state anything. We already have regulatory structures in place to set and enforce what we can consider climate safety standards, like energy efficiency standards or emissions reductions. So part of the Green New Deal will be about strengthening those standards and accelerating the speed at which we implement them, which won't cost the state much at all. And it's important to remember that right now the state and really Californians are paying for the consequences of things like the public health impacts of oil refineries and other big polluters. And we're paying that not only with our health, but the impacts of educational achievement and the cost of having to clean up contaminated land and et cetera.
We have so many people in California that are employed in industries that have fossil fuel and its low cost as a critical component, not even just people who work directly in the energy industry. How would those people be transitioned into other jobs? You got someone, you know, working on oil rigs. What sort of work would you transition that person to? If you got someone who's driving delivery truck, what sorts of job would you transition that person to? Truckers. You're talking about thousands of people.
Right. Well, in the case of truckers, you know, they don't necessarily have to become something other than truckers. It could just be a matter of changing the trucks so that they're electric. And so they're not causing air pollution and they're not causing more greenhouse gas emissions. And for more direct fossil fuel extraction industries, That's a tougher problem, and that's a discussion that we're continuing to have to figure out the details of that.
But of course, there would be substantial costs with a total revamp of California's trucking fleet to all electric. So that someone would have to pay for that.
Yeah, and the Air Resources Board is already. Has a regulation, a regulatory proceeding that is going on to figure out the emission standards for that.
We're talking with the policy director for the Asian Pacific Environmental Network, known as APEN, Sylvia Chi. Also with us, director of UC Berkeley's climate program at the Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment, Ethan Elkind. Ethan, good to have you with us again. Your thoughts about an ambitious Green New Deal for California alone?
Yeah, well, hi, Larry. It's good to be back with you. So I think these general goals put out here are really important goals, and Sylvia did a good job outlining them. I think, you know, the devil is going to be in the details, and some of these goals I think are definitely very achievable, and as Sylvia mentioned, there's processes underway, but they're going to require separate legislation and separate funding in many cases. So, for example, if we're really serious about investing and making our communities, particularly our disadvantaged communities, more resilient to climate impacts, which we've seen now with, you know, extreme droughts, flooding, and the wildfires that we just went through in California, that's going to cost a lot of money to make those communities more resilient, and we're going to need to find a source of funds to do that. It could be a bond issue or something else, but it's not going to be done just through this legislation alone. And then the goal about affordable housing and transportation investments, that one is going to be very complicated. I know you just had a show yesterday on SB 50, Scott Wiener's bill in the state Senate to try to upzone around transit stops. It's going to take legislation like that. It's not going to be done through, you know, an explicit Green New Deal process. It's got to be about the state reforming our governance structure around housing, because even if we had the money for affordable housing, or like in the case of Los Angeles with Measure HHHH, you've got, you know, money for homeless shelters that can't even be spent, because we've got so many barriers in the way of actually deploying that capital, even if we have it, which we don't in the case of affordable housing.
Well, and as we see, Ethan, with those projects that Los Angeles is working on, each unit is hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that's affordable. State Senator Scott Wiener's bill, you know, the challenge there is that going to be, even if it's built, affordable, or will that be high-end housing around transit hubs?
Well, that's really the key, is about reducing those costs. And some of that is construction costs, hard costs. There's not really a whole lot we can do except, you know, maybe encourage some innovation by the private sector to reduce those costs. But in terms of the affordable housing component around, you know, SB 50-type transit neighborhoods, you know, that bill, SB 50, has a requirement that any project that's built under those incentives has to have a certain amount of affordable housing units. And the more market-rate units, then the more affordable units. And one study done by UC Berkeley indicated that had the predecessor bill to SB 50 gone into effect, it would have resulted in a sevenfold increase in affordable housing units in California. And I should emphasize that that's not with any taxpayer dollars. That's simply harnessing the private investment in apartment buildings around transit and directing some of that towards required affordable units on site. So I think that would be a much more sensible way, much more politically or at least economically realistic way to build the affordable housing that we need in the state.
Well, since we're talking about affordable housing, let's bring in economist Christopher Thornburg, Beacon Economics. Chris, welcome back. Your thoughts about how this California Green New Deal would attempt to create affordable housing.
Well, Happy New Year, Larry. And
thank you.
This is certainly an interesting topic to start the year off at some level. I think that there's a lot of moving parts here. For me, the biggest issue overall is this is one of those grand plans with no specific details. And, you know, such utopian visions almost inevitably crash and burn. Everybody knows you got to take these things on one little piece at a time. It's evolution, not revolution. That's particularly true in these days where the ability for government to even do basic things seems incredibly constrained by all these interest groups. And I'll go back to the concept of SB 50 and affordable housing. Look, SB 50 is a great idea. I think that the idea that you wouldn't have density around public transport, it just flies in the face of just basic common sense. We know this. Yet for some reason, year after year, Senator Wiener keeps putting this forward and it keeps getting killed. It goes really to the heart of the problem here, which is, yes, we should have big goals. We understand that climate change is a serious risk. But when you look at the actual ability for us to pass even common sense legislation, you really start to realize that as opposed to having more big goals, why don't we focus on just getting a few basic common sense things done?
On the issue of more aggressive climate change regulations, more aggressive, more far-reaching CO2 emissions limits, what is the economic effect on that potentially in California with job flight, with unemployment, other factors? Or can new technology absorb a lot of that?
The answer is we just don't know. You know, what's interesting here is everybody always asks, you know, what are the effects of various sorts of climate change things we put into place? And the AQMD has actually been fairly aggressive trying to figure out, I mean, part of their mandate is to figure out, say, for example, the costs and benefits of the carbon trading that's been going on in the state of California. They put out a big ask, got some of the brightest minds in the state to weigh in on that problem. And in the end, they came up with no answer. Unfortunately, our state of understanding of our economy and how these regulations have an impact on our economy make it very, very difficult to actually see how this is having an impact. But I will tell you this. One of the things I absolutely do know, and this is something that we often forget, is if California really goes out of its way, say, to push any kind of dirty industries, make them cleaner, as the case may be, or simply regulate them out of existence, those companies are simply going to move next door to Arizona and Nevada. And ultimately, again, have we really solved anything? I think California's economy will be fine. We have a lot of natural advantages that will allow other types of industries to flourish. But again, from a broader perspective, have we really accomplished what it is we're trying to set out to?
Well, the other thing I wonder about on fossil fuel industry or dependent industries, aren't many of those some of the higher paying jobs? Could in getting the climate change benefit of reining in those industries or, you know, making them illegal ultimately, that you have a significant number of employed people who'd have a hard time matching those salaries?
Candidly, no. I think the highest paid jobs around us today are really more in professional services. They're in information technology. Those are sectors that tend to be, shall we say, less fossil fuel dependent outside, of course, of the enormous energy needs of, say, data farms and everything else. So, again, I don't see this being necessarily a conversation about workers. But really briefly. I'll throw one thing out there. We understand a significant source of fossil fuels in the state are cows. So what are we going to do about the cows? It's nice to have these plans, but when you actually realize that you can't just eliminate ranches, you start to recognize that this is really difficult, and this idea of having these highfalutin goals without recognizing just how complex it is at the local level, to me, it's silly.
Sylvia Chi, quick response to Chris's observations.
Well, I'm fully cognizant that it's very complicated, and I don't agree that it's silly to try to achieve a utopian vision. And I think it's important that we have a progressive vision that's bold and ambitious, and more importantly, it's what the science requires. The IPCC said that the transitions that are necessary to meet the climate goals that they've set out are unprecedented. And particularly if we want to do it in a socially and economically sustainable way. So it's true that it's never been done before, but that doesn't mean that it can't be done.
All right. I want to thank you all very much. That's Sylvia Chi, Policy Director for the Asian Pacific Environmental Network, known as APEN. That organization, co-sponsor of this bill, the California Green New Deal Act, being introduced in Sacramento. And our thanks to Ethan Elkind, who leads the Climate Change and Business Research Initiative on behalf of UC Berkeley Law and UCLA Law, and economist Christopher Thornburg, Beacon Economics. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll talk about those who don't want to raise a child alone, but don't have either prospects or interest in a romantic relationship to have a partner raise a child in that traditional way. What about having a platonic partner to raise a child? There are people that are doing it, and there are apps for that. We'll talk about it in just 2 minutes on Air Talk.